Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 177, Empanadas. Everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that is all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. That's what we're doing today. You know, I'm really happy to be able to interrupt your regularly unscheduled Tuesday episode because I didn't really plan before on releasing an episode today, but I have one that I've got to get to you. And so you can consider today's episode as maybe a little bit of a bonus, which is always exciting. And what are we talking about today? Well, my friend Jairo is back on the show, and we're talking about one of his great food loves, empanadas. And you know, that's one thing I love about this podcast is not only do I get to talk to interesting people who are experts in some aspect of the culinary industry or food industry, like, for example, Kate and making cheese at home from the last episode, number 176. But I also just get to talk with my friends about things that we like to cook and eat. And it really is kind of like a conversation at the kitchen counter. And that's what today's episode is all about. So Jairo's back. He's been on the show before. We're going to be talking all about empanadas. Specifically, today, we're really focusing on Colombian style empanadas. You know, an empanada is just sort of a little hand pie, usually with some sort of a savory filling in it, beef or chicken or, you know, something like that. Usually you find them with a pastry crust. We're going to be talking about empanadas with a cornmeal dough crust today. Yeah, Jairo talks about his background growing up eating empanadas, his exploration over the past year in learning to make them really well. And then in the second half of the episode, we're actually going to pop over to the kitchen and Jairo is going to walk us through, me included, because we did this live together, even though we're remote in different locations. He's going to walk us through how to make the dough, how to find, you know, assemble the empanadas and then fry them up so you have a finished product. That's going to be the second part of the episode. Now, to get to the show notes for this, which will include Jairo's recipe, along with some other links about things we talk about, including the shows, the episodes in the past that Jairo has appeared on, you're going to want to head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/177. That's kitchencounterpodcast.com/177 to get to the show notes. You know, if you want to send me an email, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com is a great place to do that. And you know what? In the show notes that I just mentioned, I link to a bunch of other places you can find the show and, you know, find me lurking around on social media and things like that. So I'm not going to get into that real deep today. I want to get right into the conversation with Jairo and empanadas. By the way, I should mention the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break Facebook group. Jairo is a member and he's in there quite often. So if you listen to this episode and you've got questions about his recipe or you want some ideas from him, you should definitely hop in there and give him a shout. All right, let's get to it. Jairo, empanadas, let's go. Hey, Jairo, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, brother. Always, I'm always clamoring to be on this podcast. This is easily... you know, I have two loves. One is the movie and one is cooking and cuisine. And this is where I come to get my my fix in for this.
Good. Well, I'm glad you're here because you've been on the show a couple of times, at least. And I can't remember the episodes. I know we talked about
chicken wings. Remember.
We talked about chicken wings. We talked about
Latin American cultures. Did we do a sandwiches episode?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. For the show notes, I'll have to dig all those up. I got my homework. But
good luck.
Yeah, I know. But you're back because we had a conversation. I don't know if it was in the Facebook group a few months ago, actually, now I think before the holidays, before the end of the year, about empanadas. And I mentioned I was working on that and I don't know what I said. I screwed something up or whatever. And you're like, what? I can talk about that. Yeah. And so we started conversing and it just finally we're here and we're going to talk about empanadas. So this is great.
No, this is exciting. I remember the chicken wing conversation. The chicken wing is probably one number one passion of mine when it comes to food, but this has to be like 1A for me, the empanada.
So the interesting thing, I was trying to do some historical research, is probably too strong of a word, but just trying to gather some facts about empanadas. And I found out really quickly, it's very difficult because pretty much every culture in the world has some version of a dough with a savory filling in it.
Right.
So if you, I guess a proper way to categorize an empanada is it's in a subfamily, we're getting really scientific here, of like dumplings. So dumplings is the super family, and then empanadas is one of those subfamilies, if you will. Yeah. So I was looking, like just think of some of the popular ones, right? And you probably have some you can throw in here. But like if you go to Asia, in Japan, you've got gyoza. In Korea, they're called mandu.
Would you put like a spring roll in this category where it's sort of a dough wrapped around with a filling?
I would
inside?
Think so. Wontons, I think you would put in this wonton category.
Samosas?
So I would say you head south to India, then you've got samosas and gujia. And then I was in Indonesia, you have, appropriately enough, panadas. You're right there. And then if you head to Europe, you know, or Northern Europe, you've got pierogies and piroshkis, which are pretty much the same thing.
You've got like meat pies as well, in like little meat pies in, I've had them in England, of all places.
Everywhere. And then, of course, you get to the Iberian Peninsula, and you've got Spain and Portugal, which is really what we're probably most interested in, because that's where empanadas proper, as I understand it, originated. Who knows how long ago, but I know the first cookbook, I think, is 1520 or something like that. That 1520, references.
That's what my research says.
So you've got empanadas, right, in the Iberian Peninsula. And then, of course, we associate empanadas a lot with Latin America, right?
Yes.
Like, the empanadas we're going to talk about today, that we're going to make part of today on the show, or are like Colombian empanadas, or the Colombian version of an empanada.
Just to kind of set the stage a little bit for myself is my father's Colombian. I was born in Peru, but my mother's Peruvian, and I was raised in Miami. We're all immigrants to this country, but my dad being Colombian really. You know, my household, it's not a house divided. Everybody loves to eat in my house. It's just, it is what it is. But then also being in Miami, you get a lot of Cuban, Puerto Rican, a lot of the islands, all that mixed together. So I've had a good exposure to this, but my dad is a very traditionalist guy when it comes to his empanadas. And this is what they gave me as a kid. So I grew up with this style of empanada. And that's why I'm so kind of, I like the taste of it. Maybe I'm partial, but you know, that's where it kind of comes from. It's sort of my background.
Yeah, that's cool. And I know empanada is probably not even the standard term for a lot of the Latin American versions either, right? Like each country has their own term for it. Like I know in El Salvador, I think they're called pasteles.
So that's a little different. Well, I've had pasteles in Miami, like the Cubans, particularly the Cuban culture, they call them pasteles or pastelitos. They're usually filled with like guava or cheese. It's more of a dessert. It's got the dough is very flaky. It kind of comes apart. You would kind of associate it sort of like phyllo dough.
Okay, interesting.
But I have heard pasteles as well. So, you know, it just varies wildly depending on where you are in Latin America.
But I guess the bottom line here is we're talking about a dough, a filling, and obviously a cooking method. And all three of those could vary widely. For example, a Spanish empanada might be made with a sort of a pastry dough, and it might have a savory filling, and it might be either baked or deep fried.
And that's what you'll run into most times is it's kind of like a pie dough is like the very most common one. And I've seen recipes online that's the kind of the hack is to get the pie dough, roll it out, and then you kind of turn those and fold them, crimp up and fill it with whatever you want. But that's sort of the more common Argentinian version. That's Argentinian is really the sort of the what everybody turns to when they see them, I guess, externally.
Right, that's like the poster child for empanadas around the world. The word, yeah, it would be the Argentinian version, which is again a pastry dough with usually a beef filling, right? In Argentina, big beef country down there. The ones that we are going to make today are a corn dough, a masa dough on the outside, and they're going to be deep fried. So there's already a difference there. But again, it's a dough, it's a filling, And it's some sort of a cooking method. And I bring that up because I was thinking before we got on the show. Now, you were raised with empanadas,
yes, right?
So you've had them probably since you can remember.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I haven't. I was not raised on empanadas. Although, I've had other interesting meat-filled pie things. But I was trying to think back to when I first had an empanada that I can remember. And this might not be the first one, but I remember 20 or so years ago, I went to Oaxaca, Mexico. I don't know if you've ever been.
I've been not to Oaxaca. I've been on like certain parts of Mexico, but not that piece, not that part.
Okay. So my friend was down there studying. He was living with a family and he was like, hey, my time's coming up. Why don't you come down and we'll travel around Mexico for a couple of weeks before I go home? I said, sure. So he was in Oaxaca. So I went down there and I remember going to the market. This was, by the way, my first trip abroad besides Canada anywhere. So it was all like just input, right? Yeah. The market alone was enough to blow my mind, you know, an open air market in Latin America. Those are incredible. And they had these stalls that they were selling empanadas. And the empanadas that I had down there, they were, first of all, they were huge. They were like a calzone size. They were huge.
Oh, wow.
They were probably, I would say, 10 inches long. And they were made with a cornmeal, almost like a tortilla. But what they did was they would make like the tortilla, they would fill it, and then they would fold it over, and then they would fry it, or they would cook it on top of like a clay top stove, and just keep turning it until it got, you know, it kind of sealed shut and it got really cooked and brown.
Like a quesadilla almost. Like
it's almost like a quesadilla or a calzone. I mean, that's really almost what it was like, what it looked like, and it was big. I can't even remember what was in it. But that was my first experience with an empanada, very vastly different than most of the empanadas you find now, like in the restaurants and things like that.
I've had empanadas in Mexico as well, and it's very different. I have them everywhere I go. You know, when I was living in Tampa, every month in my neighborhood, they had sort of like a farmer's market, and they would bring the empanadas in, and they had like curry-filled empanadas. They had chicken, pork, sweet ones, but it was always with the dough on the outside. Very, very good, always. I'm always a sucker for them. I'll get them anywhere I go. The problem we have is like when we take the kids out to dinner, empanadas traditionally serve as sort of an appetizer. You get one or two. My kids will fill up on them, right? Because they just start pounding them. And, you know, we struggle getting them to finish the rest of their dinner because they've, you know, had three or four empanadas on the way in.
They've wolfed them down. So is it safe to say you've been eating empanadas your whole life? How long have you been making them yourself?
Honestly, I just started this year when I came back from Germany. I always wanted to do it. I had an aunt who cooked for the family, and empanadas are traditionally where they used to be more so a very holiday meal. So we would all get together. Latin Americans, we celebrate heavily on Christmas Eve. So she would make tons of them and always this kind. And I never got around to making it myself. I really just did this year, I made them backbreaking work to make them, but I'm very happy with the way they turned out. And I'm not really a recipe guy. I'm kind of a, you know, throw a little of this, little of that, you know, pinch a punch. You know, I'm very much an improviser, but for this one, I'm tinkering with my recipe. So eventually I'll get to this masterful section of like this nirvana of empanada, hopefully in the near future.
So does that mean you've mastered the chicken wing? And now you need a new challenge. So you're on.
I'm pretty close. I'm pretty close with my air fryer, man. I think I'm pretty close.
This is a benefit of COVID then, learning to make empanadas at home, I'm guessing.
Yeah. My entire cooking game has had to step up because of COVID, right? All this time I have indoors, why not try to do something like this, you know? And I'm just stoked that my kids like it and my wife likes it. It's just always good. I'm you know, this thing that you're doing, you know, we talked a little bit off mic about it, about, you know, going across different cultures. It means a lot to me because as an immigrant, you know, food is one of those things where it's the bridge for people. This is how I introduce my culture to you. This is how I share who I am and who, you know, where I've been, where my family has been, all of that stuff. Food is that easy sort of mechanism to bridge those gaps. So I'm always, I like to travel. I travel a lot and I post in the group all the time. but also I like to share what I do, you know, when it comes to the food, you know, and there's lots of different dishes and experiences, like ceviche is another one, right? The Peruvian side of my family is ceviche is the thing. So I'll do that from time to time. But it's for me, it's really like a labor of love, like a passion to share that culture with folks. So yeah, man, I dig it. That's why I'm clamoring for you to also do like a Georgian episode. So I'll keep pushing you.
Yeah, Georgia the country, not Georgia the state.
Georgia the country.
Although both very valid food destinations, of course. So what else do we need to know about empanadas then before we get into the nuts and bolts of this particular recipe, which we'll put in the show notes and share. And we'll actually do in a minute a live segment of us making the cornmeal or the masa crust. Mm-hmm. But I know, you know, other things, I guess, like, as I understand empanadas, is obviously they're a hand food, they're a portable food, so they are very portable. So they're like a working class food, right? You can throw them in your lunchbox and eat them whenever you can.
They're best right out of the oil. Not just right out of the oil. Like, you know, don't burn yourself. But honestly, empanada is one of those things, sort of like pizza. It's like a blank slate. You know, you can remix it to whatever you want. I know you did an episode recently on fusion. This is a really good vehicle for that, right? You could take this like very traditionally Latin American thing, but it's like a worldwide thing, I guess, and fill it with whatever you want. I have a neighbor, you know, we just moved back to America. We're living in Northern Virginia. He's an Indian gentleman. I think he's from Southern India. And there was a recent holiday. I'm sorry. I totally forgot what the holiday was, but he made us samosas. And I was like, man, this is just like an empanada, but it had a curry chicken. I'm sorry, curry like hummus inside of it, something like that. It was amazing. But it really reminded me of the style and all that. And he was like, we did it obviously COVID safe. You know, we are outside and, you know, we had like a picnic table sort of thing. So we were able to do that. But it was just such a cool cultural gap, like the bridge. You know, he's from Southern India. I'm from Latin America. I'm from, you know, Peru. But you know, you could fill it with whatever you want. You could even sweeten or change the seasonings in the dough. So it's a very malleable dish. You can bring whatever you want to the party, you know. Make it your own if you're going to try and make one.
You know what's interesting about that, too, just thinking from the historical aspect. So we talked about Spain and Portugal, but we associate empanadas a lot with Latin America as well, especially us being from the Western Hemisphere, right? That's probably why we're familiar with empanadas. You grew up in the culture, obviously. But it's interesting to me that you've got this thing where it's a pastry crust. And as far as I know, the empanadas that the Spaniards brought over to the New World and the Portuguese brought over to the New World are probably the same as they make today, right? But you bring it to a place where wheat dough isn't as prevalent, right? You've got maize, so you've got the corn. And this way that the local culture sort of adapted it, right? It's almost like, in a way, it's almost like a tamale. If you think about it, and tamales, of course, have been in the Western Hemisphere for thousands of years, right? Right, and so it's almost like here's a recipe that the Europeans brought over for empanadas, and then, you know, based on local availability, and I'm sure they weren't even deep fried, probably, right, at first here, because I know deep frying was not really a thing in the Americas because there's just really a lack of fat. You know, they don't have cattle. There's no animal fat, really. There's no plant oils to deep fry in, really. So it's just kind of interesting how when the recipe did get here, it was adapted, and particularly the ones we're making today, you know, to use local ingredients and in what's available. And in many ways, I think, makes something more delicious than the original version.
And we see that a lot with other cultures, you know. So, I kind of talked to you off mic a little bit ahead. You know, I'm a movie guy. That's the other passion. So there's a movie that I watched a few years ago. It's called The Search for General Tso. And it really talks about how this dish, they basically, the documentary follows trying to find the origins of it.
Right.
But through that story, they're showing sort of what I was talking about earlier, that introduction of culture, you know, the blending of cultures and sort of the way the food, this dish or Chinese food in general has morphed over time in the Americas. Like here, just in America, it is a staple. You go to any part of America and you can order Chinese, right? But that food that you're ordering may or may not, it's likely not going to be the same that you would get actually in parts of China.
Right.
Right. Because we've Americanized, we've adopted it, we've changed it. It still has its roots, but you know, it's morphed over time to change for the palate and for the better or for worse, you know, but it is a blending of those cultures. The other movie I was going to recommend to you was, I don't know if you ever, have you ever seen City of Gold?
City of Gold. It sounds familiar, but I don't.
It's a documentary about Jonathan Gold. He was the Pulitzer Prize winning food critic that was out of L.A. So this, he died pretty recently, but this is a few years old now. And it really, he's the only food critic, I think, ever to win a Pulitzer. And he basically goes around L.A., documents him. You know, he's a champion for the small, poor restaurant, you know, the mom and pop joint. And rather than just exclusively focus on, you know, on the Michelin star restaurants, he focuses on these carts, like hot dog carts or whatever, where maybe empanadas, you know, something like that. And he's a champion for those things. It's a great documentary, but it also talks about how he's being introduced to all these cultures and all these people's experiences and lives through his respect and his sampling of the food. It's, I think it's on Hulu or something like that. And, but you can rent both of them for, on Amazon Prime for like $2 or something like that.
Okay. So City of Gold and what's the one, The Search,
for General Tso.
So, okay. So we'll definitely get those. I've seen that, the Search for General Tso. I've seen that one on Netflix, I think. I haven't watched it.
It was on Netflix for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very cool. So let's, maybe we should talk about the recipe that we're going to share today. And you've got three components to this recipe. And again, I'll put it in the show notes. But we've got, of course, the dough, the filling, the cooking method, naturally. But also you are, because these are Colombian, you are providing an ají.
Yes.
Recipe, which is the picante, the spicy sauce that goes well with these particular empanadas. So do you want to just walk us through? We're in the live segment, we're going to just focus on the dough itself.
Like the final piece, like the final
assembly and frying. Yeah. But just give us a heads up. What can we expect with the ají and the filling? And again, as you said, the filling is very versatile. You can pretty much put whatever you want in there.
Yeah, you can put whatever. I've had these with like chicken, like shredded chicken, like almost they call you could like stew a chicken and then shred it up and put it in there. That'd be great. But for this one, it's the traditional method of doing the Colombian empanada, which is a beef and potato based filling. The filling, you have to let it cool down, obviously, right? Because you don't want to put that hot filling onto the masa, but it's very, very simple. It's got a lot of veggies into it, right? Cilantro, parsley, red pepper, tomato, onions, a lot of foundation to season that meat. And then the potatoes, when you dice them up and boil them, I boil them with a bouillon cube in there to get that. And I do this for a lot of items I call like pasta. If I'm going to make pasta, a lot of times I'll throw in, broth, a little bit of chicken seasoning, something like that, to just punch it up just a hair. Like I made ramen for my wife last night, and I cooked it in some like leftover broth that I had that was just frozen in the fridge. I need to get rid of. So
nice.
It adds just a huge punch of flavor.
But also if you're just cooking rice, that's a great flavor hack too.
Absolutely.
Don't want just white steamed rice. Just cook it in broth, not water.
Yeah, exactly. It just adds another dimension of flavor, but. There's so much building that goes into this dish, right? You look at it, oh, it's just meat inside of a dough. But, I mean, as you go through the building of all those flavors, there's so much that goes into this. So it's such a diverse flavor that comes out when you're eating it, because you got that chicken-flavored potato mixed with this very herby meat. And the ají that goes on the side. So traditionally, when you go to a restaurant, it'll always be in like a little container with a little spoon right next to it. You just spoon a little bit right on top of your empanada, usually after the first bite, because it creates sort of like a pocket.
Right. Yeah.
So it won't run out. But it's very basic. I like mine really spicy, so I use habanero peppers as a base. The one thing about the ají is you take I think it's like a half cup of vinegar. I mean, you'll have the recipe out there, but you put in the blender for like 2 minutes so that the blades are infusing the vinegar with the pepper. So it becomes almost one, and you have to I have one of those Ninja Vitamix or whatever you want to call them. And you put it at the highest speed it goes, and you just hold it there for 2 minutes. I mean, that's a lot of chopping and blending and beating.
Pureeing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, you put it in a, what do you call it? Like a glass bowl, but not the, because you don't want it to react with the lime
juice. Right, right, right. Non-reactive, yeah.
Non-reactive. And then sugar, water, lime juice, cilantro, parsley, tomato. Again, lots and lots of building blocks of flavor that are just going to, just for that one little spoonful of thing. But once you get the hang of it, the first time I made it, it took me forever. It took me hours. But this time, I just fly right through it. You know, set your mise en place and you can go.
And if time is a problem, I mean, like the filling, you can make that the day before. You can make the ajillo day before, right? And then you can just leave the dough in the assembly till when you're ready to eat. In fact, the filling I made today. Yeah, I made the filling today, yesterday, right? So it's already done. It's just in the fridge and it's already cold and I just, you know, it's ready to go. Spoon it right
into
the dough.
That hot oil will get it hot again.
That hot oil will get it hot, no worries. Yeah,
not a problem. And then the masa, the actual pastry is so easy to make. So I don't know if you're going to put a link to in the notes, but the actual, it has to be like a cornmeal. It can't be, you can't use like flour or something like that. It's got to have that grit because once you fry it, it sort of puffs and becomes kind of crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's just basic, man. It's just some of that masa, a little bit of water, some seasonings, salt, a little bit of oil so it doesn't stick to the pan, to your bowl. And it's definitely more art than science because you have to get that right consistent because when you fold it over, you don't want it to crack or break, but you also don't want it to mush. So you kind of use the recipe as a guideline, but don't be so strict about it because you don't want it to be, you want that just right. You get the hang of it after a few tries, right? You want it to be kind of pliable, wet still, but not too wet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, cool. What else do we need to talk about on that? Is that?
I'm hungry. I mean, we could talk about that, how hungry I am to eat some empanadas.
Jairo's hungry. We better jump over to the kitchen so we can actually make some of these. I know your family's probably waiting with bated breath to get a hold of some of these too. Because this did we mention this at the beginning? This has been on the calendar for a while. And we were going to do this last weekend, but the weather, as most everybody who listens knows, didn't cooperate. And
I think we planned this right when I came back from, we've been talking about this for months.
I think we did. I think we did. And then, life just gets busy. But here we are.
We'll save more of our recordings for our Joni Loves Chachi spinoff.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to jump over to the kitchen and we're going to do the final assembly and the frying of the empanadas. And then we'll hop back up here to wrap up. All right. So we're here in the kitchen. Jairo's going to show me virtually here.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Barring any technical difficulties, he's going to show me how to actually make the dough, the shell for these empanadas.
So kind of behind the scenes, we both made our filling ahead of time because it is a little bit time consuming. There's a lot to chop. There's a lot to cook. And, you know, you want to do it slowly and bring it up. And then it has to cool because you don't want to stuff like piping hot filling into this dough.
Yeah, it'll just make your dough fall apart, right?
Right. So I also made my dough, which is about a cup and a half of the masa arepa. I can send you a link, or I sent you a link of it.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of sazon goya, which is basically, it's like in Latin America, man, that's like the go-to crutch for seasonings, right? It's where you add a little bit of punch to it, a little salt, a little bit of oil, and like 2 cups of water. And then you want to get that right consistency where it's not too dry, not too soft, because if it's too soft, it mushes and it just come apart in your hands. It's too dry, it'll crack as you try to roll, fold it over and do all that stuff.
And what was interesting when I was putting my dough together, and I've never made this particular type of dough before, is I was worried that it was going to be too watery, too juicy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Too runny, but it really came together. In fact, I didn't even use a full 2 cups of water. I've got a little bit of water on the side that if I need to add it, you know, maybe less than a quarter of a cup left, a few tablespoons.
And it's more art than science, right? You want to feel it as you go. So what I do is I throw the 2 cups of water in and I work it with the back of a spoon. And I always use the back of a spoon, not the front, because the front gets, because it's concave, it'll hold too much stuff. I'm just a back of the spoon person. And then I have a little bit of the cornmeal and I just kind of toss it in as I want to kind of bring it to that firmness with my other hand. And then once it's to where it doesn't stick to the bowl so much, because I use a, like you can see, I use a stainless steel bowl
Once it stops sticking to the side of the bowl, I know that I'm at a consistency I want. I just roll it in my hands, make a ball, cover it with a little bit of my cling wrap, and let it sit to the side in a warm place for about 20 minutes. Then it just kind of come together, settle down. There's no there's no rising. There's no there's none of that stuff.
It's just, you know, I was going to say, so far, and we haven't filled and fried these babies yet, but so far it's a lot easier than working with a pastry dough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's quicker, right? You just bang, comes together. So, all right. So we've got our dough balls here, and I've got a place like you do, I'm sure, where we're going to press these out or flatten them out and fill them. So how do we do that?
So I have got my mise en place station. I'm a big mise en place guy. I mean, I've railed at you, and you did. I think you brought it up in one of your smorgasbord episodes, talking about that. But I have my filling in one bowl, my masa in another. So what I've laid down on my, I have a granite countertop here, very fancy of me. I have just a little piece of cling wrap, and then I have another one to top it. So what I'll do is I'll take a little bit of my dough.
Like how much is a little bit? Like golf ball size? Are we shooting
for? This is where I shoot from the hip, right? Normally, you know, on your show, you'll say, hey, take an ice cream scoop or something. I've got a little bit bigger than a golf ball.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out if I'm shooting for like softball, golf ball, you know, what order of magnitude. But I got a golf ball size going here too.
We got a golf
rolling ball. It up.
Yep,
we're gonna. I'm using parchment paper, so let's see how this works.
Okay, I'm using cling wrap. So what I want to do is it almost, you know what a macaron is? Like the is a macaron macaroon sort of size, because that's where you're gonna get to where you're not
like a little disc.
Yeah, a little disc. So you can see kind of my disc shape there. I will put that right down, and I'll just kind of work it without the second piece of cling wrap until it's... So it's now it's about the size of but the palm of my hand. So this one is actually going to be a little bit big.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what mine is, too. So now we're putting the second layer on top.
The second layer of cling wrap goes right over it. I stretch it out. Yeah.
Okay.
And then just gently with my finger, I start making like a circle shape.
Okay, I'm cheating. I'm going to use a pan and press mine down. We talked about this.
I'd be interested to see how that turns out, because
almost like a tortilla press. In fact, somewhere in my house, I've got a tortilla press. I don't know if that would be appropriate or not, but okay. I'm going to show you what I got here. I think this worked okay. I just kind of evenly rolled the pan around, and can you see that?
Oh yeah, that looks really good. Now, how high do you, how like mine is? I would say less than half a centimeter thick.
Oh, mine's pretty thin. Mine's pretty thin.
Mine's very thin.
I would say a couple millimeters, maybe.
Okay, so all I did was...
Whatever that means.
So you'll see mine, right? Mine is...
mine might even be a little thinner because I pressed it. But we'll see. We'll see how this works.
And mine is very misshapen. Mine is very much... So these traditionally empanadas are... all
mine is perfectly round, by the way.
Oh, wow. Well, look at you. That's why you have a... That's why you have a fancy podcast. And I'm just some schmo who follows you, brother. Okay, so now we have our moon shape. I still have mine in my cling wrap, the bottom piece.
Okay.
And I'm just going to take a spoonful of my filling, which is the ground beef, all the veggies.
Okay. And like a tablespoonful, maybe.
Yeah.
Or something.
You got to kind of eyeball it. You don't want to overfill it, because you're going to do is once you fold it over, it can crack depending on how your dough is.
Yeah, and you don't always found when I'm doing things like this, whether it's little ham pies or whatever, it always takes less filling than you think, because as soon as you fold it over, filling is going to start gushing out the side.
Yeah.
You need that border, right?
Right. And what you don't want to happen is the filling to go into your oil as you're frying it up. So my oil is about to 370. So I'm going to turn down my oil just a little bit and let it kind of come down, because I don't want to be too hot when I go in there.
Yeah, I'm just getting up to 350, so.
Okay, so I use the cling wrap to roll it over, so my hands aren't actually touching the masa, the shell.
So you're like just folding it over
this
might be where cling wrap is going to be superior.
And my thumb kind of goes underneath the shell closest to me, my other fingers are pressing the meat sort of towards here. Let me see if I can get my camera.
Yeah, it's right. Almost like you're rolling a burrito and you're kind of keeping the filling in as you're rolling it.
So like just like this. And I roll it and I just keep going.
Yeah. Okay, cling wrap is going to be superior to parchment. I can see for this reason alone. I might have to switch up. Okay, I think I'm folded over here. And then what do I do? Do I crimp it with a fork or?
I just let it, look, it just sticks to itself. If you look at it, it's so wet.
I've got crackage.
Yeah, you gotta add a little water to yours, brother.
And add water to mine. Okay, hold on, I gotta do that. Okay. Now what do? I've got this ball of dough. How do I add water to it? Just sprinkle it on and knead it in?
Sure. That's my best guess.
You're like, yes, that. Okay.
You're the expert, man. No, in all honesty, I haven't had to do it.
Okay. Timing and I was just breaking a minute ago how I had water left over.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, last laugh is on me. Hold on here. Okay, now it's a little more moist. I'm just giving it a quick knead. I just made a little hole in it with my thumb, poured maybe a teaspoon of water in it.
Okay.
Or so, maybe a little bit more. I'm just re-kneading it. Now it's much more pliable. So I'm going to try this again. I'm going to do take two here.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that that other one is not going to cut the mustard. All right.
So while you're tinkering, I'm going to go ahead and make another one because
Do it.
My family has been eyeballing this. So I've had this date on my calendar for this podcast for quite some time. Obviously, you and
I. We both have.
You know, but my family has as well because they know they're going to come down and they're going to pow into this. I had to stop them from stealing the filling as I was kind of letting it kind of cool down. My wife was in here taking scoops and they really dig it. My kids actually like to do this. And what I really want them to do is be able to help roll these out so that we can get kind of like the Henry Ford.
A little assembly line going.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, this is a very sensory rich experience. Like if you're, my kid's a sensory kid, you know, mm-hmm. he loves the touching and feeling and bumping. And this would be right up his alley.
Yeah. And you know what? My kids are very picky eaters, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
They will gorge on this. Obviously, it's not the healthiest thing because we're deep frying it and all that, but I don't know.
Could you bake these, I suppose? I mean,
I think so. But it just makes me feel good. At least, you know, my kids are growing up in a very more Americanized household than I grew up in. And it's just always really fun when they can, I see them enjoying parts of this side of us, right? Our culture. Even though, you know, we've traveled around the world quite a bit. We've lived in Tampa, Germany. Now we're in the D.C. area. It's just very important that it's just
absolutely
that they enjoy this aspect of it.
Okay, I've made another one, Jairo, and I think it turned out way better.
Okay.
I'll show you. Ready?
Let's see it. All right, looks good. And how did you crimp it shut?
I just pinched it kind of with my fingers, and it, like you said, it stuck right together. I did not crimp anything. So it's kind of plain looking, but who cares, right?
Exactly.
Now, my oil is near 350. When can I pop it in, or do I need to make several? I probably should make several.
I'm going
to
make a couple. So
yeah,
because
I can get like three in there at once.
Yeah.
Okay, I got two down. I'm on a roll now, man.
Yeah. But my back's already getting tired. Like I'm already wearing down. Well,
my oil's beeping at me. Let me turn it down.
Okay.
Okay, I think I got three just about done here.
Wow, you're really the pan thing is. I'm gonna have to like adopt.
I'm not doing that. I abandoned that.
You're just using your fingers.
Yeah.
Okay. How are you going so fast,
dude? I don't know. I'm starting to run into a little bit of trouble with this parchment. I'm gonna have to switch. I think.
Cling wrap.
Starting to get a little sticky.
The cling wrap doesn't grab the. So did you put oil in your masa?
Yeah.
Okay, so the cling wrap works really well with that because it keeps it from sticking.
I just hate cling wrap.
So do I. You know, my mother-in-law was here visiting for a few months. My wife had surgery, so she was here to help out. She's old school. She loves her cling wrap. So we had boxes, and she kept forgetting that she was buying cling wrap. So I had about four boxes of cling wrap in there at one time, and drove me nuts because I don't use it for anything other than this.
Yeah, I hate it. All right, are we ready to fry these bad boys?
I am ready when you are. So
I got a super ugly one and two okay looking ones.
Yeah, I've got one that has like a bullet hole in it, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah,
mine's all patched up here. Okay.
All right. So my oil is give or take around 370. I think the recipe I sent at 360, but you know the temperature is going to drop a hair once you put it in. So all I'm just doing is sliding it in there with my bare hands. I'm obviously being careful not to burn myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry, my alarm is beeping. Okay.
And that's
all
it.
All right, here we go.
You know what I forgot to do was lay out a little paper towel.
Oh, man, I got a rack going on over and everything. So.
Oh, wow, look at you, fancy guy. Woo. Yeah.
Okay, we're in.
Now,
hold on, I got to wash the red hot oil off my finger.
One thing you want to do, okay. What I do is because I don't want them to stick to anything, because it is a dough, mm-hmm. I kind of just pull them off the sides a little bit.
Just kind of move them around a bit so they don't cook on.
For me personally, I will cook my empanadas until you start to get a kiss of brown on any part of it. That means it's done. Like, I don't set a time. I don't know. I put it in at 15:15. So, I mean, I know traditionally if something starts to float, it's done. But
now, I know you probably never have leftovers, but how long do you think these bad boys would last? Like, can you make these ahead of time very far? Have you taken these to a group function or something?
Yes. I actually took them to a friend's house. We had a little, like, sort of potluck thing months and months ago, and I made them, and I put them in a Tupperware, a big Tupperware that I have. I probably made about 20 of them, and I individually put, like, little wax papers in between them so they wouldn't stick, and I took them over there, and I had them in the fridge and just right there and fried them up.
Dude, these are looking amazing. So I'm just using my Le Creuset Dutch oven. I've got maybe 2 inches of vegetable oil that I'm heating up in it.
I am using canola oil. So it's just whatever you have.
Well, actually, I'm using Wesson, whatever Wesson is. I think that's canola oil.
I think it's canola. I'm using whatever was on sale, brother.
I'm starting to think I need to take these bad boys out. I'm starting to.
Don't be afraid,
really,
man.
Really getting a golden color. One, I've got a little brown on the edges.
Hey, well, once you get that brown, take it out.
All right, one's cut. That's the ugly one coming out. My little rack. Oh, man, it looks so good.
It's good.
It's ugly, but it looks good. You know what I mean?
Now, let me ask you, did you make the hot sauce to go with it?
What, you can put me on the spot like that? No.
I did.
I did not.
It honestly doesn't take a lot of time.
Yeah, these turned out really good. They've got a night. The crust feels good. I'm feeling good about these. All right, ready? I'm going to try it.
All right, let's see it, brother.
If I howl, it's because I melted my face off. Hold on, let's see if I can prop my phone up here.
Oh, yeah, looks good.
Okay, show you. It's hot. hold on. My fingers are all greasy now. I'm trying to prop this up, but it's not working. All right, if this is hot, I'm going to break it open. Looks good.
All right, looks good on the inside. It's smoky. It's crunchy. I can hear the crunch.
Holy moly. Oh my God. I'm almost tempted just to say I didn't make empanadas today when my wife and kid get home. Just save them for myself. That is good.
Good, huh?
You know what? I love this. Oh, yeah. I love this so much more in general than the pastry variety. Those are good too. Don't get me wrong.
They're great,
but
you can infuse flavor into the crunch, into the mm-hmm. dough itself, and that's what I really love about them. And obviously, I have a personal attachment to them, but I don't know. I go to bat for these every day of the week. When I was in the Army, my mom used to send me them frozen. Like, she would buy them at the store, freeze them, and then mail them, and then bring them up to me whenever she came to visit.
These are so good.
They're delicious.
All right, I guess that's a good tutorial, and we'll put the recipe in the show notes on how to do these, and we'll jump back to the kitchen counter studio now.
All right, bro.
That was fun, and I was surprised. I've never really worked with the masa dough before. It's very quick to come together, unlike a traditional like pastry where you've got to have the ingredients cold, and you know, it's so finicky. And this isn't not finicky, but it's a lot easier to deal with and adjust as you're going. Whereas if you screw up a pie dough or a pastry dough, you're kind of screwed, right? But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was relatively easy to put together. I could see where it could take a lot of practice. Easy to learn, probably takes a lifetime to master.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the trial and error of it over the years. Like you said, it's an easy thing to fix, like the dough, right? There's not a lot of magic behind the scenes. As long as you got the seasoning right, just a little bit of water or a little bit of masa, kind of just to get to that right consistency like that I was talking about earlier, of being able to fold it over, roll it, and the interesting thing about it is you don't have to crimp it. It just sticks to itself. So you just have to get it over the filling and make it adhere, and you're good to go.
All right. So we'll put the recipe again in the show notes for all of this empanada goodness. You know, whether you want to make the pastry crust version or the masa dough version, it's all good. Experiment, get in there, try them all out. But definitely, if you never worked with masa, you should give it a shot, because it was a lot of fun. And this is probably how I'll make empanadas going forward, actually.
Oh, I certainly will. It's easy. I mean, like I was saying in the corner, what I need to do is get my children into the assembly line involved, right? Get some of that work out of the way.
Yep. Yeah, this would be great for kids. So, well, thanks, Jairo. We'll have you on the show again. We'll talk. You've got lots of ideas for food. So
I'm going to rope you into this Joni Loves Chachi thing, man.
We'll put it to good use somehow.
All right, brother. Thanks again, man. It's always an honor.
Oh, likewise. Thank you for coming on. Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jairo and you know, empanadas top to bottom, at least the Colombian style empanadas. In the show notes, which are at kitchencounterpodcast.com/177, I do include the recipe that we went through today, that Jairo's recipe, and I also included some links to some pastry style empanadas as well. So if that's the style you want to go for, check that out. But I should mention too, I don't think we mentioned it in the show, but I believe the version that we made with the corn flour shell is gluten free. So if you've always wanted empanadas, but you're gluten free and you just didn't think you could have them, this is definitely something you should look into, because you can now go crazy and eat all these little buggers that you want. All right, Jairo, thanks again for coming on the show. I'm already dreaming up ways we can get you back to talk about more tasty Latin American food, or food from wherever. I know you've been all over the place. Well, I hope you all enjoyed this bonus episode today of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Again, if you like the show and you think some of your family or friends might get some value out of it, please, please, please feel free to tell them about it and show them how to find it on whatever podcast app they can use. And you know, we're also on smart speakers now. I keep forgetting to mention this. So if you have Amazon Alexa, or I don't even know what the other ones are called. I don't even have a smart speaker. I feel so 2018. But I think if you just tell your speaker, like, Alexa, play the Kitchen Counter Podcast, I think it'll play the show. Try it out and let me know what you think. And if you have an Alexa, maybe it just started playing the show because I just told it to. Anyway, I'll be back next week with another great episode. Until next time, everybody, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.